Welcome to Ball Games and Beyond, your go-to podcast for all things sports. Brought to you by SportsNot.com. Join us as we dive into the hottest headlines and trending topics in the world of sports.
Jordan, open, Chicago with the lead!
Covering everything from the NFL, NBA, MLB, PGA, to NCAA.
And Bonds hits one high! It's a deep!
So, whether you're a diehard fan or just love a good game, Ball Games and Beyond is your ticket to taking your passion for sports to the next level. And now, here's your host, Evan Grote.
Hello, sports fans, and welcome back to Ball Games and Beyond. I am your host, Evan Grote, and Ball Games and Beyond is brought to you by SportsNot.com. You can follow me on X at egrote5. Make sure you are subscribing to the podcast, both on the audio and video version. If you're looking for video, head over to YouTube and search SportsNot. Click the notifications bell as well. And if you're looking for the audio form only of the podcast, head over to your favorite podcasting platform and search Ball Games and Beyond. And don't be afraid to leave me a 5-star review and rating if you don't mind doing that for me. Now, this week, it's been a busy week in sports. Over the weekend, we saw the women wrap up their college basketball season with a huge number for their national title game. South Carolina completed their undefeated season, and Caitlin Clark's wonderful career comes to an end. The men finished up their season on Monday night with UConn becoming the first team to go back-to-back since the Florida Gators did it with Billy Donovan back in the 2006-2007 seasons. And so college basketball seasons are all wrapped up for now, but they're still in the news. John Calipari is leaving Kentucky and going to another SEC school, the Arkansas Razorbacks. So college basketball continues to stay in the news. Also this week, the Masters tees off on Thursday, one of my top five favorite sporting events of the year, much like the NCAA tournament. Very much looking forward to see that. Tiger Woods is my guy. Let's see if he's got a little bit more magic left in him. We'll have to see. Scottie Scheffler right now is the heavy favorite to win his second Masters, as he has just dominated thus far in golf. He's got 2 wins, 7 top 10 finishes. So we'll have to see if he can get it done here this weekend at Augusta National. A lot going on. Of course, the NFL draft coming up here in just a couple of weeks. It's prime rumor season. There's a lot of different rumors swirling out there about different trades that could happen, teams interested in particular players. You never can trust anything you hear right now at this part of the season in the NFL. But yeah, we'll be covering the draft as well for you as that gets a little bit closer here in a couple weeks. But the topic for this week's show, we're going to go to Major League Baseball. I'm sure you heard it by now. There's a little bit of controversy right now in MLB, and it involves pitchers and this new pitch clock rule that was adopted last year by Major League Baseball. There's been a number of pitchers who have been dealing with elbow injuries. A lot of pitchers having to get the Tommy John surgery. It's been a problem for many, many years in Major League Baseball. But there's a lot of elite pitchers who are shelved right now. And there's some young pitchers who are going to be out for the season now, dealing with this UCL injury to their pitching elbows. And so there's some debate right now between the players and the league. The Players Association president Tony Clark is accusing the pitch clock of being some of the reason why we're having this number of injuries to many pitchers. Of course, Gerrit Cole is shelved right now for the Yankees with elbow injuries that he dealt with in spring training. Jacob deGrom is still working his way back from his second injury. And then you had a couple young pitchers, Yuri Perez from the Miami Marlins, Shane Bieber also done for the season. So it's a big topic right now in baseball. Baseball, of course, the league denies that the pitch clock is the reason for what we're seeing here recently take place. The MLB, the league believes that there's more to it than just the pitch clock. They have a study that was done by John Hopkins, which we haven't really seen the results released of that. But they claim that there's no correlation, according to their study by John Hopkins, they claim that there is no correlation or no evidence that the pitch clock is responsible for the uptick or the number of injuries we are seeing with these pitchers early in the season. Now, you have to go back to last year when Major League Baseball implemented this new pitch clock rule, which as a fan of the game, I have to tell you, I'm in big favor of it. To me, baseball games were taking far too long, and it kind of drew me away from the sport, to be honest with you. I've always been a big baseball fan my whole entire life, but as I got a little bit older, I just didn't have the time to invest to sit there for 4 hours to watch a baseball game. They implemented the rule last year along with many other changes to the game, and it shaved off about 24 minutes two games. And to me, that made them more watchable. And so they got me back. I've been watching more and more, especially last season and early parts of this season. I've been following along a lot. And again, to me, the pitch clock has been a really good thing for the game of baseball. This year, they shaved off even two more seconds to the pitch clock. When runners are on base, the original rule was 20 seconds. Now that new rule is 18 seconds with runners on base and 15 seconds when no one is on base. So again, from a fan perspective, I'm in favor of the rule, but there's been a lot of players who have come out and spoke up against the rule and why they believe that it does have an effect on the players, especially the pitchers. There's a lot of articles out there that you can read. Our guest, who's going to be on with us a little bit later here in the show, Andy McCullough of The Athletic, a senior writer there who covers MLB, he has been all over this topic, and he has a couple of really good articles out right now discussing this very topic right here. And in one of his articles, he referenced actually another article that was written in The Ringer, and that article cites data that was collected from 2010 season up until last year. And what you can learn from this study is that there has been a steady rise in the number of UCL surgeries that pitchers in both the majors and the minors have had. So to me, when you look at the problem, this is nothing new. You know, the Tommy John surgery has been around for a long, long time now. So to point the finger at the pitch clock, to me, I don't necessarily agree with the players and the Players Association. I believe there's a number of reasons why these injuries are occurring. And I think number one, you have to start with what's going on in the youth game, right? These kids are throwing way too many innings, right? And they're probably throwing a little bit harder than they should. We know young kids, they're not as knowledgeable maybe as they should be, and neither are the coaches who are mentoring these young kids. And they're taught to throw hard, try to strike people out, try to blow the ball by people. And that, number one, I believe is a major factor in what we're seeing. These players are they're throwing these pitches at a young age, and they continue to do so. They make it to the majors in some cases, and their arms are already, elbows and already in rough shape as it is. The other factor that I think has a big effect on what we're seeing is the game has changed, right? Like other sports, Major League Baseball has changed. We see hitters really focused on hitting more home runs, right? Power, the power aspect of the game is as popular as it's ever been with the exit velos. That's a huge focus right now for players. You see more strikeouts, lower batting averages, because players are focusing on hitting the ball out of the ballpark. I'm a Yankees fan. You could look at a player like Judge, who is a prolific home run hitter, but has also, he has the tendency to strike out a lot because it's feast or famine in some cases with him. And there's plenty of other players across the league that you can point to with that similar issue. On the flip side of that, pitchers are now trying to counter that by throwing harder, max effort, max velocity, right? Spin rates. We're hearing about this more and more over the last couple of years. And to me, that max effort, that max velocity, throwing as hard as you can, knowing that pitchers are not going to go deep into games as we have seen in past years, they're trying to just rear back, throw that 100-mile-an-hour fastball as long as they possibly can. And to me, I think that's doing a little bit more damage to the elbow than maybe what the players are leading on. So that's a little bit of my thoughts on the topic. We're going to bring in an expert on this right now, Andy McCullough. After we take a quick break, we're going to bring Andy in. He's going to discuss this topic with us. He's also got a new book coming out in about a month. It's a biography on Clayton Kershaw, who is also out with an injury right now, so it's kind of relevant to the conversation, but we're going to get to that in just a second. Coming up next on Ball Games and Beyond, brought to you by Sportsnet.com. And welcome back to Ball Games and Beyond. Let's now welcome in our guest to further our discussion on the topic this week, Major League Baseball, and the epidemic they are being faced with right now with pitchers and elbow injuries, Tommy John surgeries. Our guest this week is Andy McCullough, a senior writer for The Athletic. He actually wrote an article recently on the topic of what's fueling all the arm injuries in Major League Baseball. We have him here now to chat with us. Andy, thank you for the time and welcome to the show.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Andy, before we get into the topic here and the debate that's just raging right now in Major League Baseball, I want to give you the opportunity. I know you have your first book coming out here in a little under a month. May 7th is when the release date is, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. The title of the book is The Last of His Kind. It's a biography on Dodgers pitcher Clayton Kershaw. You can find it, you can pre-order it right now on Amazon, Target, Walmart, many places. But I wanted to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about the book without giving away too much, of course, and you know, why listeners should go out there and pick it up.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, as you mentioned, it's a biography of Clayton Kershaw. I spent extensive time with Kershaw and his family in Texas and in Los Angeles over the past couple years, you know, talked to 215 people. And it's a, you know, a story about, I think, the most important pitcher of the last 25 years, you know, of certainly of this generation. I think he was the central figure of October baseball for, you know, about a decade. And I think it's about, you know, his sort of, you know, journey to try and win a championship. It's about sort of the challenges of being as great as he's been for as, you know, at young an age as he's been. And, you know, it's a story about, like, you know, learning how to change without losing sight of yourself. It's a story about, you know, what modern baseball looks like. You know, so there's a lot of stuff in there. You know, he's also dealing with an injury. So there's, you know, there's some relevance there with the current topics. He's coming back from major shoulder surgery. So, yeah, I mean, I just, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there, I would say.
Now, I mentioned this is your first book. So what gave you the inspiration and the interest to write this book? Can you take us through that process a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that it's something that I always wanted to do. You know, it always sort of set as like an aspiration for myself. I have a relationship with Kershaw dating back to, you know, I was the Dodgers beat writer at the LA Times for several years and, you know, used to live in Los Angeles and write about the Dodgers a lot. I still do. I just live in New York now. Still, I write about the Dodgers too much. But, you know, and so I felt like he was really the only player in baseball who had a compelling enough story for a full-scale biography. I don't mean that to slight the careers or achievements of, like, other players, but I felt that his story, his career, had such a clear narrative arc that it would make sense in the form of a book in the way that, you know, like, Justin Verlander is probably going to end up having better numbers, better career, you know, he's won more championships, but there's not really, like, a story there for me, you know. I think with Kershaw, that him pursuing a title was just such an obvious, you know, storyline, such an obvious, you know, quest that, you know, the public, you know, especially folks in Los Angeles were waiting to see him fulfill. And I think just the, you know, I think I talk about this a lot, like, if you go to Dodger Stadium, you know, even if, probably if you go, you know, right now while he's injured, if you go to Dodger Stadium at 2 p.m. for a 7 p.m. game, if you look out in left field, Clayton Kershaw almost certainly will be running, doing his, you know, daily routine. And, you know, every single day he was out there, whether he was hurt, he was, you know, healthy, whether he had just had a great game, bad game, never took days off. And I would sit there and just kind of think, like, why is this guy like this, you know? And getting into that, trying to answer that question, you know, I learned a lot about just what the requirements are to have a career like that, to really be sustained, you know, to experience sustained greatness for like 15 years.
Yeah, he's had a really great career, and it sounds like a really fascinating book. And I'm sure it would make a great Father's Day gift, which is coming up here in a few weeks. So anybody out there looking to get their father a gift, go out there and do that. Again, you can find the book coming out May 7th. Pre-order it now. Amazon, Target, Walmart. I saw it's available on Barnes & Noble as well. So looking forward to that. I'm going to have to pick that one up myself. And you can also, if you give Andy a follow on X, at By McCullough, you can also find more details on the book there as well. So, Andy, let's jump into the main topic of the show now. Again, I mentioned the story you wrote on The Athletic recently, What is Fueling the Rise in Arm Injuries in Baseball. The Players Union says it's the new pitch clock, right? And then the league is denying that. They don't think the pitch clock has much to do with it. They say there's other reasons why. Let's first start there. Let me get some of your – where do you stand on the argument of, with all these injuries to the pitchers and their elbows and the Tommy John surgeries?
Yeah, well, I think the idea that it should be an argument is missing the point. I think pointing to any one individual – reason as the sole culprit for what's going on misses the point. I mean, look, you can say, like, you know, it's, I am sympathetic to the players' belief, and a lot of players feel like the clock makes their bodies feel different when they deliver the baseball. And so that has to have some effect. They're basically, the players are arguing that there's not enough data to say that the clock has no effect. The league is saying, hey, we have this sort of unpublished analysis from Johns Hopkins that says it's not the clock. It's kind of a red herring in some ways. I mean, I think that there are so many different things that go into this. You're talking about, you know, the league, not the league, but the broader, the industry's sort of push towards optimization, the prioritization of efficiency over durability, the, you know, relentless quest for velocity and movement, the training methods that players are undertaking, the way the youth, game, you know, sort of tends to overuse and, you know, not abuse, but just like sort of overtrain players. And everywhere down the line, you know, you talk to someone and you're like, well, where does it start? And they point to someone else. You know, if you talk to, you know, big league coaches, you're saying, like, why do you have all these guys who don't know where the ball's going and just throw as hard as they can? You know, they'll say, well, this is, you know, how we got them. They were developed and sent this way. If you talk to the players, they're like, hey, I was told that's how you get to the big leagues. You know, if you talk to the youth coaches, they're like, well, it's because we're trying to get these guys drafted. And so everyone is sort of, it's the relentless, I think, hunt for velocity, movement, maximum effort that is sort of fueling everything. And there's so many tributaries into that. So I think making it just about the clock, I think, is missing the point.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think there's a number of factors that are involved in that. And as you mentioned, a few of them, especially the uptick in you know, max effort, max mm-hmm. velocity on every pitch, every inning. We're seeing pitchers not go as deep into games as we have seen in recent years. So I do think those are playing just as much of a role into it as maybe the players believe the pitch clock is. Now, I know the league made a change in the pitch clock rule from last year where now there's 2 seconds less. It went from 20 seconds to 18 seconds when there's a runner on base. And I know the players were not happy about that, of course. How much of the discontent that we're seeing from the players is just about, you know what, we're gonna cause a stink here about the rule itself, and we're gonna kind of place the blame. This is an opportunity for us now to kind of place blame on the pitch clock because they are having so many injuries so early on in the season. Do you think they're kind of taking advantage of maybe the situation?
I don't know. I mean, there's certainly some opportunism in, you know, there's an injury to Shane Bieber, and then the union puts out a statement saying, you know, the league needs to examine the clock. I don't know how productive that is. I do think, though, that players feel like the league isn't listening to them for on-field concerns. You know, the players were there was debate about the pitch clock, the original implementation of the pitch clock. I think everyone can agree that it was a necessary, not everyone, but I think most folks would agree that it was a necessary innovation. The game had gotten stale, the game had gotten stagnant, and the product, I feel like, look, one man's opinion, the product last year was better. The clock made the games better. However, and what the players are saying is, okay, look, you already made this big shave. You shaved 24 minutes off each game. You know, why do we need to continue to adjust it at a time when we don't know the exact effects of the clock? I'm sympathetic to that. I don't know if it was necessary to remove those extra 2 seconds against the objections of the players who were outvoted on the competition committee to make that change. So I don't know if it's opportunism. I think what it is a legitimate belief that the league doesn't listen to their concerns all the time.
Yeah, and I can see how that would make the players frustrated as well, especially when, you know, in sports, especially in like NFL football, you keep hearing about player safety as being like a top priority. Sure. And I guess when they make rule changes like this, you start to question that. You know, when I think about this similarly to I think about like NFL quarterbacks. I mean, to me, when I'm watching NFL football, I want to see the starting quarterback out there. When you look back to the last season in the NFL, there was a number of backup quarterbacks who had to start due to injury. And to me, that takes away from the games. I'm going to watch the game still, but to me, it takes away a little bit of the quality of play. And I think about this the same way with starting pitchers. I want to see an ace out there every 5 days, you know, yeah, for my team. I'm a Yankees fan. So, you know, not having Gerrit Cole out there every 5 days, that takes away from the game a little bit from me. When I go to games, I try to schedule the games that I'm going to when the ace is going to start that day. That's just something I've always done. It's something that makes it that much more exciting for me. And I have a feeling that a lot of fans feel the same way when it comes to that. As exciting as it is to see an Aaron Judge play or an Ohtani play for 9 innings, I do think starting pitchers, especially the top line starters, are a big draw for fans, not only to go to the games, but to watch them on TV. So I just want to get your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, I think that's what I really like about baseball is watching two elite starting pitchers, you know, go as deep into a game as possible. I think what the industry has figured out is that those are really hard to find. It's really hard to find Gerrit Cole, right? There's a reason why he makes, you know, he's a $300 million pitcher, is because he is like physically, mentally, emotionally built in a way different from his peers, right? And it's hard to make a Gerrit Cole. It's hard to make a Justin Verlander. It's hard to make a Clayton Kershaw. It is much easier to take a guy who, you know, has maybe some good characteristics on a breaking ball, has, you know, the room for some strength, you know, improvement, and you can pick up some velo and take that guy, hulk him up, and get him so that he's able to max out for 75 to 80 pitches. And it's cheaper, too. You know, and teams have gotten so good at utilizing data to understand how to, you know, sort of be as efficient as possible as trying to, you know, get outs through a game, that they sort of have, you know, kind of optimized to the point where guys are just breaking. The human body is not meant to do what they're asking these guys to do. And, you know, but the players are doing it because that's the way you get noticed, you know? Like, if you sit 90, 91 with good command, that doesn't move you up the ranks. If you're striking out 15 guys per nine, that does.
Yeah, and, you know, in your story on The Athletic, you referenced an article, a couple of articles, actually, and one of them was from The Ringer, mm-hmm, which cited data from 2010 in the number, yeah, of surgeries to both major league and minor league pitchers, and it's been a steady climb, mm-hmm, you know, in the number of UCL elbow injuries and Tommy John surgeries. So for the players to make the argument that, oh, this is happening now more and more because of this rule, which was just implemented last year, I don't think that it gives them much weight in their argument. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I understand the point you're making. I think from the player's perspective, they're not going to be like, it's our fault. We should throw less hard. right? Their argument is just, hey, look, you guys aren't listening to us. We're telling you that we think the clock is making it worse. You know, we're telling you we think the baseballs are making it worse. We're telling you, you know, the bans on sticky stuff are making it worse. You know, that is, it's just the general argument is the league is not listening to the players. The league obviously disagrees with that argument, but I agree that the clock is not the sole issue here. I don't think it's totally fair to say the players are saying it's all the clock. I do think that that is the sort of easiest way to separate the two sides because they just feel like they're not being heard.
Yeah. Fair. So let's say at some point, and we'll wrap it up with this one here. Let's say at some point, it most likely won't be this season, but at some point, the two sides come together. They try to find some common ground. There's no easy fix to this problem because, as you mentioned, the human body just isn't meant to do some of the things that a pitcher is asked to do. Which steps do you think that the league and the players union can take to make the game safer for pitchers? Whether that is, I've read a couple interesting ideas myself out there online, maybe giving teams and pitchers incentive for going deeper into games, which may, you know, get them to pull back a little bit on the max effort, the max velo in those shorter amount of times that they may be out there. Maybe making mandatory 6-man or, you know, 7-man rotations, less games, shortening the games as far as length and less innings. I mean, these are some extreme ideas, I know, but at a certain point, something's got to give. So what direction do you see this possibly going in?
I think it's really hard to figure out how to fix it. Like, cause some of the ideas you presented, like, like, they're not going to shorten games. They're not going to have fewer games in the season. They're not, you know, going to do.
They're not taking money out of their pockets, right?
Yeah, exactly. They could certainly try, but that's the owners would never agree to that, you know, because the players would demand prorated salaries. But let's say, like, incentivizing teams to, you know, have starters go deeper into games. Like, what are those incentives look like? Like, is it draft picks? Is it bonus pool money in the international market? Like, is it, luxury tax discompensation? You know, if you have a certain, like, there's financial ways to do it, to incentivize it. I don't know if there's a way to create, I would have to, I'm not smart enough to know this off the top of my head, but a way to create financial incentives or draft pick incentives or all that stuff that outweighs the fact that it's easier to win a game this other way, you know, like it's just easier to win a game. And that is the challenge. I do think, you know, there needs to be messaging from the league downward to the youth level to, you know, protect kids. Because I think one thing that, you know, college coaches, folks in player development, they're like, look, we get kids who are already broken. You know, they've already been throwing breaking balls for too long and they've already, you know, been max effort for too long. And, you know, they're already like their hourglass is drawing thin. And what the folks will say is like, well, we're trying to get attention. This is the only way I can get a college scholarship, whatever. So there has to be, you know, more dialogue about trying to, you know, make that more effective. But that's talk. I mean, I really don't know how to put teeth into this. And in the same way, like the league can mandate, say, hey, you know, we're going to have, you can only use 12 pitchers on your roster. Right now it's 13. Let's move it to 12. Let's move it to 11. Okay, whatever. Execs are just going to keep optioning relievers in and out. And it's just going to create, you know, they're just going to do roster jujitsu. You can argue, okay, you know, the starter has to face a mandatory number of batters, right? Like, is that safer? You know, what if the guy's tired and, you know, he has to try and power through his mandatory number of batters? You know, that might be an injury risk. Just everything has like a trap door behind it. It's a really challenging problem. And, I don't know if I would say it's a crisis, but people involved certainly feel it is. So it's, you know, it's bad. It's a bad time.
Yeah, and I think you touched on a great thing there that I probably should have brought up earlier in the conversation, and that's the youth game. you know, these players coming in with injuries, as you mentioned, it's probably not being talked about as much as it probably should. I have kids, you know, who are in that age right now, starting at the kid pitch level, and you know, you can see it happening. These kids are out there throwing, you know, as hard as they can, probably more than they should be, and you know, there's rules in place, but you know, depending on who the coach is and who's monitoring all that, there's some things going on that you know you're not happy about, but. Andy McCullough, everybody, thank you for the time, Andy. Go out there and give him a follow on X at By McCullough. Check out his book, release May 7th, The Last of His Kind, a biography on Clayton Kershaw. Keep up your great work, Andy, and thanks for coming on with us here today.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.